A state senator wants to be incarcerated in solitary confinement for 72 hours. Now, those were the opening two lines of a recent Hartford Current article, and it's talking about Dr. and Senator Saud Anwar, who joins us on the air for the first time. And Senator Anwar, I want to thank you so much for giving us the time. Is it true you want to go into solitary confinement voluntarily?
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me. Yes, it is important because we need to recognize that in our state, we are creating situations where the individuals who are incarcerated in some of the prisons, they are 21 times more likely to hurt themselves and kill themselves because of how they are treated. And this is the worst form of torture we can provide or give to individuals. And we have to have serious conversations about who we are and why we are doing this to our incarcerated individuals, but also the correctional officers.
So, a question for you, Senator Anwar. How long has solitary confinement been a reality in prison systems? I mean, I guess we'll talk about Connecticut in particular, because we could talk nationally, but, you know, we're focused on our state.
It's been there for a very long time, and there have been efforts every year to try and address this. And in the past, the legislators have come together to pass laws to try and restrict it. Some of them have passed, but others have been vetoed by the governor.
So solitary confinement in the state of Connecticut is not restrictive housing now?
Well, it's how you call it, right? You label it. It's still solitary confinement. You actually can sugarcoat it by saying it's restrictive housing. It is still the same thing. The wordings don't change what the person endures.
So what does that mean, I guess? What is restrictive housing compared to solitary confinement?
Functionally, for an individual, they're going to be alone. They may get a couple of hours to be outside of that closed environment, but in reality, they're still alone. And we know that the impact on their well-being is no different. And the individuals continue to have worsened mental status, continue to have increased risk of depression, suicidality, and the outcomes are not good for those individuals when they get better and they are supposed to come back to the society.
Okay, so we have Senator Anwar here, who happens to also be a doctor. So your concern, Senator Anwar, if I'm understanding correctly, is you worry about the mental health of people who are in solitary confinement versus, you know, if what would be, I guess, a solution? What would be a better solution than solitary confinement? Because I the understanding is you have solitary confinement to, you know, for good, you know, for behavioral reasons in prisons. And I'm wondering, what would you say is a better alternative?
Sure. Melissa, first and foremost, thank you for raising this question. So we need to recognize that the individuals who undergo the solitary confinement, it is considered worst form of imprisonment. If you hear Nelson Mandela's statement, because he was placed in solitary confinement, he said that no one truly knows a nation until one is inside a jail, but the society, how they treat the prisons, especially in solitary, reflects the character of the society. American Psychological Association has recognized that paranoia, depression, suicidality all increase in individuals who are impacted by this. And medical literature also shows that the correctional officers who are managing, correctional officer's job is one of the most difficult ones amongst any of the jobs for the state. But the ones who actually are overseeing some of the individuals in solitary, they have higher anxiety, higher depression, higher burnout, higher stress rate, and also have a higher risk of suicide. So we are also creating a situation that the prisons are, one of the functions of the prison is to have the person pay for the dues and then come back to the society when they have fulfilled their requirement. What we are doing is that we are actually resulting in permanent mental damage for those individuals, never be able to come back and be part of the society or go through mental issues for the rest of their remaining lives. So these are becoming mental life imprisonments, not only for the incarcerated individuals, but unfortunately for our correctional officers. So the question comes is that this tool is this tool worthy to cause permanent damage? And we need to have a serious conversation, data-driven conversations, rather than emotional conversations about why we do what we do and what do we get out of it. And that's what I want to do. And can I add one more thing, Melissa?
Of course.
I know this article was trying to make people think differently that, oh, this is a doctor who's doing this wrong. I work on my bills, and I take every bill seriously. When I was working on bills on homelessness, I actually stayed out in freezing temperatures overnight to see how people who are experiencing homelessness feel. I actually stopped eating because I was working on a bill to try and make sure how people are experiencing hunger. And this is important for us to live some parts of the bill so that we have the empathy and commitment to try and help the people who have no voice. And it's something that's important, and perhaps more legislators should do that rather than try to target legislators who are speaking out about something that's not right in the society. The status quo isn't working.
Right. To your point, Senator Anwar, I think that's pretty admirable when you want to, you know, go through the experiences of what the common person is going through. To your point, if we're going to talk about homelessness, I think it's important that we understand what the person who is going through homelessness is dealing with, or if you are, you know, dealing with no electricity, or, you know, like I admire that. I think that that is, I think it speaks to the fact that you're clearly a doctor and not just a senator, because that to me is thinking like the mind of somebody who is taking, you know, people's bodies in your own hands to make sure that you're taking care of them correctly. So that totally aligns with, I think, the person that you are. When I was reading this article, it said that you want to check into Garner Correctional Institution, which is the one in Newtown, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I don't know anything about that place. I've never been there myself. But I was curious, you know, you're correct. In the article, it definitely is saying that this would be kind of a waste of effort and money, and you wouldn't be treated like a typical inmate. But what are your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, I don't think you would be treated like people are behind closed doors at a prison.
Well, no, I perhaps would not be, but at least I need to be able to experience the loneliness that a person experiences in the same place where many hundreds have actually stayed physically themselves, and just be fed what they are fed, just be treated how they're treated in that space. So how can one who is in solitary be treated differently than a person who is in solitary, who is incarcerated? And the Garner, I recognize Garner is considered the worst facility in the state. A person who is in Garner facility is 21 times more likely to hurt themselves or commit suicide. So we have a problem going in our Garner facility. And the reason is that people with mental health issues are usually in Garner Correctional Institution. And when they are put in solitary, we are not treating them. We are making their mental condition worse. And this is a very common sense issue that should not have to happen. But people are not looking at it from a medical perspective and the psychiatric and psychological perspective. They're looking at it only and only from a correctional perspective. And we are not doing any justice to those individuals and to the people who are the correctional officers.
So why not, instead of being in solitary confinement, address those concerns you just said? I mean, the statistics you just shared are pretty alarming. 21 times more likely to hurt yourself if you're at solitary confinement at this particular corrections facility. Why not just better that?
Well, we have not been able to pass the laws. When we tried to pass the law, the governor actually vetoed it. So we need to do drastic things to be able to raise the awareness that we are not doing the right thing for the people who are voiceless right now. So again, there are not a lot of people who are going to stand up for the voiceless in our society, but that's precisely what needs to be done, is to stand up for the voiceless. And right now, our state has not been able to pass the laws that are necessary. So we need to raise that awareness further, including individuals who are willing to say, I'm going to experience a little bit of what many people are experiencing every single day.
We have Senator Saud Anwar on the show for the first time. And Senator, thank you so much for your time. I wanted to kind of talk about some other major news headlines that you've been in recent months. And I figured I have the opportunity to have you here. First of all, you were quoted in the beginning of the summer in CT Insider saying that it's time for Governor Lamont to step aside. Are you planning to run for governor?
No, I'm not. Thank you so much for asking, but I'm not interested. I just want a governor who's going to address the needs of the people and not necessarily veto bills or threaten to veto bills or not address the issues that are right in front of us. As an ICU doctor, when a patient is sick, when somebody just walks over and then leaves that patient behind, it's not the right thing. And I have had difficulty with the governor choosing to walk away from very critical issues at a very critical time in our history.
Who do you believe would serve better?
I'm more interested in the values and the policies rather than individuals. And right now, I have had opportunity to learn about the various individuals who are running. And I've seen Josh, who is planning to run, who seems to have all the policies that I would support and value to be somebody who's there.
Okay. And he's referring to, you're talking about Representative Josh Elliott.
Correct.
Okay. There was an article, again, you know, not to keep quoting the Hartford Courant, but I thought this was an interesting one. This was, I think, last month, if I remember correctly. But you were talking about the cost of wrong actions by Governor Lamont when it comes to overdose prevention centers throughout the state. And you had talked about how, you know, obviously these deaths are preventable, no question. But you were saying by removing part of Senate Bill 7 with a veto threat by the governor, there have been 789 overdoses, 83 precious lives lost. And it was something you had actually posted on your Facebook page. But in reality, whether this were to pass or not, it wouldn't even go into effect until next year. Was this sort of a stretch? Was this another way to just say, I don't love the inactions of our governor? I mean, because it just seemed like a little bit of a stretch, to be honest.
No, well, I'll share with you. It's not a stretch. There's this data-driven information. It has been, the research on this started 40 years ago in Europe. And for 20 years in North America, this has been proven. Study after study shows that there's a way to reduce the number of deaths. The issue comes down to is that we have a stigma around the issue. The stigma is not only the people who are using substances, they are undergoing their own stigma, the workplaces are going through this stigma, their families have the stigma, but on top of that, our society and the policymakers have a stigma too. Now, for us, the number of deaths, we are making such good, important policies for the transportation because of motor vehicle accidents, and we are trying to reduce them and raise that awareness. Far more people die from substance use in the state of Connecticut, and we have had about 7,000 some people who may have died in the last many years. And where are our policies? Where are comprehensive strategies for that? And when you have data-driven information that is there and the governor to just say that I'm not sure what's right, it's the people who are dying in our neighborhood. Half the people, almost half the people in the state of Connecticut know somebody personally who has died. Where is the alarm? Where is the corrective, collective responsibility that we need to stop this rather than say, I want to wait and see? We have been waiting and seeing for years. We have improved something, thankfully, because of the Public Health Committee that I'm one of the co-chair for with our policies that we have been able to reduce some of the deaths, but we are far from being able to say it's a successful situation. So I feel we are allowing our young people to continue to die in a state where the death rate is higher than the national average for substance use, and the collective correctional opportunity for that is missing because of a poor decision the governor made.
So because of this veto, I just want to make sure people realize in this bill, it was going to allow for four of these overdose prevention centers, which are, I mean, more commonly known as safe injection sites. But Senator Anwar, is it really that bizarre that the governor would veto this knowing that there's only three of these actually in the entire country? Like, and they're not here. They're in our surrounding states, but we would certainly be an outlier state to have these. They're very controversial, these safe injection sites.
Well, the controversy is because of a federal law that is, by most law professors' perspective, is untimely and actually not representative. So this is a public health issue. So if we were to collectively say that this is a public health issue, then we have a responsibility to address it with a public health lens. Rhode Island is doing this, and they have saved so many lives. New York has been doing this for the past many years, and look at the fact that the state of New York, the city of New York, they are actually giving money and resources to try and strengthen the work at this time. Rhode Island, the state of Rhode Island is doing this. Minnesota is planning to do this. Vermont is planning to do this. The issue is that we have to humanize the individuals who are going through substance use, look at it as a medical condition, help save the lives. Like in an emergency room, when a person comes with an emergency, you take care of them and then you admit them for health care. In the same way, the overdose prevention centers are like emergency rooms for the people using substances, and then you're able to help them get into rehabilitation. Every one of those lives is savable. It's preventable, and we are allowing them to die, and it should be unacceptable to most people.
Senator Anwar, I want to thank you for giving us the time. Unfortunately, we have run out for at least today's edition of Melissa in the Morning, but I would love to have you back on the show in future. If you would like to come back, we would love to have you.
I'll be honored to be part of it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Senator Saud Anwar here on WICC.